Welcome to The Frontline, the sales and marketing podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Frontline Sales and Marketing Podcast, where we aim to provide entrepreneurs and enterprise leaders with the three T's, the tools, tips, and techniques that help improve sales and marketing knowledge for better results. I am Evan Collis, CRM and Marketing Automation Specialist, and I'm joined here with Jeremy Pierce, founder at Outside Sales Training, and our guest, Jeff Wade, a behavioral scientist and consultant who works with medium to large and complex organizations and guarantees a 21% improvement in 21 weeks. Welcome, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you, this afternoon. And yourself, Avon and Jeremy?
Very good. Very good. Welcome. Yeah. And so I guess... that's a big promise, 21% in 21 weeks. Why don't you tell us a bit more about yourself and your outlandish claims?
All right then. And I'll probably get provocative when I respond to that 21%. So I'll talk about myself and then come back to that. I'm a bit of an oddball. People ask about my background and I laugh and say I'm a mutt. A bit of a crossbreed because I started out in engineering and computer science of all things, so robotics and automation. And I didn't survive very long in that. The next thing I found myself in management. They decided I was a crap engineer, but I was really good at leading people. not quite. I still have engineering blood pumping through my veins. But I wound up in leadership, which kind of sent me back to school to study business and to study people. Because intuitively, I understood that being an effective leader was about building high-performing teams. It wasn't about being the boss. Mm. And that served me well in my career. Along the way, I got really interested in what was the difference between exceptional performers and your core performing and low performing. And how could you transfer, after you codified what the geniuses were doing, how could you transfer that to others? It's generally known as the field of experts and expertise. And so I did some postgrad studies in that arena as well. And that kind of has wound me up where I am now, being totally fascinated by people, having started out as an engineer, and what makes them tick and how they perform exceptionally well in organizations. And as for the 21% in 21 weeks, let me just be outrageously provocative. What the heck? To all you salespeople and sales managers out there, 21% in 21 weeks is what our organization promises generically. That's across the board. That's whether you're in sales or whether you're in operations, right? So if we're talking about just a sales engagement, the number typically becomes 50% and above. Now, some of you have probably fallen out of your chair and give me zero credibility at this point. Let me tell you, we have never done an engagement with any sales team where the uplift has been less than that. In fact, typically, sales performance improvement with sales teams, it's not real hard to get 100% improvement in productivity, double. I'll come back and explain the how and the why, but there you go. Let me throw that provocative challenge to the audience. They can go, what? and you can ask me a little bit about the how, the why, and would I be that provocative and serious about it too when I make that observation.
What are some of the metrics or skills, I guess you could say, because there's some sort of measurability, right, in sales and performance. So yeah. What are some of these skills that can be measured in sales?
Well, if I start, before I say the skills, the tail end stuff that one's typically looking at is the conversion ratio, if you will. In other words, the effectiveness, the productivity of my activity. But the other thing I'm looking at as a salesperson is the volume of my activity. You know, just the number of calls and things that I'm doing. So there's a little bit of time management in there. And then there are things like, if you will, the average transaction value, whether I'm discounting or cross-selling and upselling. And the other favorite measure, of course, is the length of sales cycle. Now, you can kind of, if I start with those trailing measures and work backwards, you can intuitively appreciate there are behaviors at the front end that a salesperson, or metrics at the front end, as you say, that a salesperson might be executing, or behaviors that they're executing that give us metrics that tell us how they're performing against these things that drive those outcomes. And if I take any particular one of those, so conversion ratio, perhaps, sorts of behaviors that precede that, the really simple, obvious ones are, I ask some questions of my prospects. I might ask questions about what's their normal evaluation process, right? How do they go about making these decisions? Who are the people in the organization who are impacted? Who would be on the decision team? Because as you're selling to an organization, it's really that one individual makes the decision, especially when what you're selling might have impact more widely than one individual. And so the suite of questions, just picking those couple of behaviors, for example, rather than getting too sophisticated and complex, that actually uncover what the decision-making process is. And then map that out and agree with my prospect that that's, if you will, a little mini project plan that we're executing. And we assign tasks, dates, responsibilities. That simple process is going to vastly impact my conversion ratio. It's going to significantly impact the sales cycle, how long it takes to get there. And you'd be surprised how many salespeople miss that piece. They're kind of leaping straight onto the product, forgetting that they're facilitating a buying decision. They're lost in thinking they have to pitch and do the sell. But if you facilitate smart purchasing, if you lead your customer or potential buyer to making a smart decision, they sell themselves.
So you're getting them to buy more just by the questions you're asking and then actively listening.
Yeah, and you literally through question. One of the things that I sometimes do with people that we work with, and this is in leadership or sales, it's a favorite assignment that we give people, and it gets raised eyebrows. But actually, it's a tip for your audience. I'm volunteering this because I think it's immensely, immensely useful, and it's so darn simple, right? So here's. First, a piece of framing and then the exercise, right? The piece of framing is do this in a safe context, right? So you're not going to go out and cold turkey do it with your clients. Do it with your friends and family and your work peers first. Number one is that, all right? So safe context. Number two, tell them that you're doing it first. Otherwise, they're going to think that you're barking mad and they're going to call for the people in white suits with a vehicle to take you away, right? So tell them that you're doing the crazy exercise. And in fact, when you're doing it, you can say, I was listening to this podcast and there was this crazy bastard called Jeff Wade making outlandish comments about just how well salespeople can perform if they really master their art and the science.
Yeah.
And he laid out a challenge that allegedly helps salespeople improve their performance, gives their customers a better experience. And the challenge is this, it's real simple. You're not allowed to communicate with anything but questions.
I've heard this one before.
Yeah. And
why is that?
It's you know, for example, yeah, Avon just demonstrated it, right? He asked me a question. And I might think, well, you know, how would I do that? You know, I'm thinking that's the question that Avon asked. You know, Avon might ask me, you know, what's the time of day? And I'm looking at the clock here on my screen. And so I would respond, Avon, is there anything really important that you've got to do at 4:15 p.m. today? Now, I've told Avon the time, but I've asked him a question. And if you think about it, there's pretty much nothing that you can't communicate with questions. And when you start to play this game, this drill, having framed with your audience first, don't break rapport or relationship mastering this skill. You get to the point where you, as a salesperson, when you get a question from someone, the first thing that whirls in your head is, well, do I answer this? Or do I gather a bit more information with a couple more questions first and then answer it? And then I'll wrap up my answer with another question, which changes again the flow of any conversation because you direct the flow of a conversation with questions. As a salesperson, here's the other favorite tip of mine. Ask more questions. Because questions don't control the conversation. The content of the conversation is controlled in the answers. So if you will, your buyer is controlling the content. Damn, I forgot to mute my phone. Let me just go back. So, questions don't control a conversation. Questions direct, if you will, where the conversation's going. So you can direct it with your questioning. Your potential buyer controls the content with their answers. And then you choose your next set of questions according to the answers.
A big difficulty or challenge for a lot of listeners, maybe small business, I think, small to medium size. And a challenge I am frequently put in front of is a measurability of these performance or key performance indicators. And not a lot of small businesses don't measure these types of metrics, essentially. And so it's a big challenge.
We're making it easier for them to do it, Jeremy. And I don't mean my organization. I'm just thinking of the software and the AI and the stuff that's out there.
That's right.
If you've got a field sales force, it's a little bit more difficult unless they can record the calls. But for anyone who's on a telephone, there is clever AI software now that you can have running on your system. And it listens into the conversations that your salespeople have on the phone.
Yeah.
And it also looks at their emails. And it will give the sales manager a summary of the nature of questions and how many questions they're asking. So, so as a small business or a large business, you may not be measuring that, but let me tell you, there are some really affordable tools that will give you radical transparency around those critical things and allow you to be, you know, medical, if you will, in your precision with your coaching. And then actually know whether it's worked, because the AI will tell you if the behavior changes.
When you were talking about the questions and the fact that, you know, getting some feedback on that, you know, when I was doing intelligence training in the army, there was, you do interviews with people, basically, not like interrogation, not like angry, just asking questions. And these paid actors would not answer you unless you asked an interrogative or an open question.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how many times you say to someone, would you like to go to the shop or not? Or do you want to do this or not really? It's a very, very pointed thing, and it doesn't allow, it's kind of like, are you going to buy or not? Or are you ready to buy yet? That should only be, that's a one word answer. And commonly their answer will probably be, the easiest answer is no. And walk away.
And another way of responding, another way of asking that question, since you want to go open, is, what else do you need to know, Avon, to buy what I'm selling you right now?
Yeah, pretty much. Yep.
Yeah. And I totally get it. But here's the funny one. There was some research done by Huffway Corporation back in the 70s, and it has been repeated since, but they were the first ones to do this. And it was done, Xerox actually funded it over about a 10-year period. And they sat in on, it was tens of thousands of sales interviews across the Xerox Corporation, across the US and the rest of the world over a decade. I think it was something like 35,000 sales interviews. And they were looking at this. I'm going to be a little bit provocative for the audience again, sorry, but I hope what I'm being provocative about is useful. And we've all been taught in selling the open questions are what you've got to ask, and contrast to the closed questions, the ones that get the yes, no answer. And you know, the example you shared from your military experience, which fantastic way of learning too, I love it. But the researchers found that about 40% of the time, I think it was around 40% of the time, when you asked an open question, you could get one of these closed answers. They also found that when you asked closed questions, there was a reasonable chunk of the time, and I can go back to the research and look it up, but it's, again, it was significant, 30% or something of the time, you get an open answer. So the message to salespeople is, don't worry too much about whether it's an open or closed questions. Open questions are more useful. I'll get you more information, but just ask questions. And then comes, of course, the valid point. Okay, I ask questions, but questions about what? And there, that is the heart of success in selling or facilitating an intelligent buying, is knowing the questions or the contexts or categories, if you will, of questions you want to ask.
What's the definition of smart buying for our listeners that you have?
Smart buying is it's something from my perspective that affects both the seller and the purchaser. So from the purchaser's perspective, and look, I'm talking business to business sales here, but it applies in business to consumer equally well. But in business to business, typically the sale that you're executing is I'm either providing you raw materials that you're going to use in your production process, and or I'm providing you something that's going to improve your business in some way. So I'm selling you a product or a service that you're going to use that generates some cost saving or revenue increase in your business. So I'm selling you something you consume to do what you do, or selling you something that improves performance in your business. So a smart buying decision is one where I, as the buyer, I purchase something that's going to generate the highest return for me with the lowest risk. But from the seller's I also purchase from a company that delivers what they promise. So I'm not going to have buyer's remorse in terms of an emotional response. And I'm not going to have buyer's remorse in terms of, hey, they promised X and I got X less Y. And then, you know, from the seller's perspective, the last thing you do want is that buyer's remorse equation. Because if you overpromise and underdeliver, you just sullied your brand. You've transacted a sale that's unlikely to be repeated, and you've created a problem for your business, because now you've got to turn a happy customer around, and usually your investor will have way a lot more than it costs you to sort out a problem where there was an overpromise and an underdelivery. Yeah. So a smart buying decision is where I match my capability as the seller to deliver whatever to your requirement as a buyer, so that I can do what I promise. I do what I promise. Everyone's happy. The buyer gets the value or the return on investment they're looking for.
Yeah, it's a good tip for anybody doing this in sales is always review the agreement terms so there's no surprises. Yeah. Make sure that there's transparency and straightforwardness in your conversations, and also justify the expense of the service by making them rationalize it out loud and with you. So this is a really good way of doing this and explaining.
One of my favorite skills of superb salespeople is they use paraphrase. But the paraphrase they do themselves sometimes. The paraphrase they get the customer to do. And they'll do it during a sales meeting on a regular basis, you know, as they're working their way through. You know, say they've just got to the point where they've just had the potential buyer admit that there's a business problem, and they've discussed the impacts of that problem, the costs and consequences, and maybe I'm selling to Jeremy, or facilitating his buying decision, and I will recap to Jeremy. So you know what you've said to me is you've got this problem X, and it's actually really significant because it's impacting these people and your clients in this way. And it's costing you think about this much. So you've got a compelling reason to fix this. Is that right, Jeremy? That's a trial close, I suppose, at the end. But there is this piece of recapping the discussion. But I might also just ask Jeremy, you know, we've just been talking through what you think the problem is, who's impacted internally, who externally is impacted in the customer base, how, and the costs and consequences. Could you just summarize that for me so that I really understand how you perceive it?
That's right.
That's a reasonable thing to do, because Jeremy will then summarize it for me. Yeah, 80% of the time, what he says will not be a surprise. But there's 20% of the time where he'll drop in a nugget of gold that we've missed in the conversation.
Mm.
And so this paraphrase of regular points during a meeting is a really important sales skill. And then at the very end of your meeting or your sales call, you can paraphrase or recap the whole thing. But you as the salesperson do the one at the end. During the meeting, you can toggle between you and the other person or other people if there's more than one that you're selling to at that point. Jeremy nailed it there. That is so, so important.
So what you're saying is you need to ask questions and you need to deliver what you promise. Was there anything else?
And I said, yeah, paraphrase. Paraphrase regularly.
Summarize, yeah. Summarize. Make them rationalize it out loud, which is really a good example.
Now, for the audience who were awake, Avon was demonstrating what to do, right? And he checked that I'd been listening by intentionally leaving one out to see if I took the bait. And I did, hook, line, and sinker, right? Yeah. Your buyers are going to do the same.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you don't have to be like loud. I think sometimes everybody thinks that you've got to be like super in your face, a rowdy sort of a character to be in sales. I think that's probably has the potential to may not necessarily be an effective salesperson that can listen to someone who isn't of equal volume and voice. Yeah. You know, maybe they might lead someone on and then they get to the point where they're like, oh, actually, I didn't really want that. I feel like I did get pushed. And yes. And then they again, that the buyer's regret, the buyer's remorse. I think our struggle is we find that, you know, with the CRM side, people don't know what they don't know. And until they get into it and they start using it, then there's like massive amounts of scope creep because they're like, oh, we could do this, we could do this, we could the shiny object syndrome. So the paraphrasing is really good just from, you know, business perspective, just to control what the starting project is or and is not.
Yeah. And it gets you that affirmation of it's in response to that kind of two things come to mind. One is the piece, I'd like to respond to the piece you mentioned about some who get highly excited and think they're good salespeople, talk fast and loud. I'll respond to that. And then this other piece that the paraphrase has another piece to it in terms of it allows you to calibrate, if you will, whether you're getting a, whether you've got, you know, at this point in the conversation, you're still holding a yes sort of response from your potential buyer, you know, because you want to know that you haven't lost them and that you think you've got a yes, but in actuality, you lost them a little while back and they're delivering an internal no, I'm stuck. You can't go forward yet. I've got like more questions.
Yeah. It was like a, yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
But.
Yeah. But the bit, that's another piece you raised. You know, good salespeople, if I can use the metaphor, they are chameleons. And by this, but when I say this, I mean integrity prevails. Yeah, that was presupposed in some of our earlier conversation where we said, you know, you want to avoid buyer's remorse. An effective person who's facilitating a good buying decision is absolutely selling with integrity, right? Mm. They're looking to make sure the customer's going to win as well as their organization. They're not looking for a win-lose or a lose-win. It's a win-win sort of thing they're trying to create. And so with that frame of integrity, you're still a chameleon around there. What do I mean? You know, a chameleon, the lizard that changes its skin color. I mean, a good salesperson is immensely flexible in how they behave and communicate because they're communicating with a whole raft of people who are different. And some people talk fast and loud and they run movies in their head and that's kind of why they're doing it. They think predominantly with movies, which are rich in information, and they very quickly, you know, get to where they want to in terms of making decisions. Other people, they don't run with movies in their head. They run with a lot more. Well, they do, but they run with a lot more internal dialogue. Mm. And so they're a little bit slow. And then there are others who experience the world and make decisions where they're using a lot more what we call a kinesthetic representations or feelings. They've actually got to feel it in their gut or their body before they're comfortable making a decision and moving forward. And they're typically, they talk a lot more slowly. Now, this has given you a cue. If you rock in and you're dealing with someone, you know, I used to joke, I come from a farming background, among other things, and the farmers in my family very much speak and think at the speed of changing seasons. That's no reflection on their intellectual capability. They're very smart people, very astute business people, great farmers, and have farmed with success for decades in a business that's a challenge because, you know, the income you're getting, the price for your commodities is constantly dropping over time. They're sufficiently business astute to be able to reduce their costs and still do very well in that kind of environment, right? So they're smart people.
Mm.
They talk slow. You rock up to these guys and talk like the city slicker and they're going to write you off as one, right? There's a thing that we talk about in sales, which is reducing the difference between you and your audience. Mm. So if your audience talks fast and in a slightly higher pitched voice, then don't mimic them or mirror them. That's just transparent. That will break rapport. But reduce the difference. Speak a little bit more quickly. And if they're talking in that mid-range with a slightly more resonant voice, you can slow down and operate somewhere around there that's within your comfort, but match it, not mirror it, but just reduce the difference. And if they're talking real slow, it's giving you an indication of how they experience the world, and you can slow down a bit. You don't have to totally match them, but don't be the New York City slicker, right?
Mm, yeah.
And when you do that, by the way, it builds rapport.
Yep.
Common ground. The foundation for effective selling is rapport.
Yeah.
If you ain't got rapport, you ain't got trust, and you ain't making a sale.
No, that's it. So I guess in closing, that's probably more around have a structure and a broad plan, but not necessarily a script.
Oh, never a script. I can be robot man and operate from a script, and I will be bored. I'll put my audience to sleep because my intention is just upon being a robot, right? Mm. But if I want to be a human being dealing with a predictably unpredictable human audience, guess what? I'm going to respond to them. And now as a salesperson, it's a whole lot more fun. I'm literally, you know, I've got a dance, if you will, going, a communication dance between me and my audience. And I'm intellectually stimulated because while I might have a framework or a process that I'm following, within that framework, I have the freedom to be myself and respond to my audience as well, which keeps them engaged, keeps me engaged, and we both have a lot of fun. Selling doesn't have to be painful for either party. We're human beings. And at the core of our existence is this desire to connect with and relate to other human beings. And a sales or a facilitated buying process, whatever you want to call it, is one of those forms of connection.
Mm.
And it's one of the, you know, if you're a salesperson, usually that's one of the joys of your job is you get to meet a lot of really interesting people and you get to know them. Mm. And you get to help them out by selling them stuff that makes their lives or their work better.
Mm. Absolutely. Jeremy, did you have anything to close with?
No, that was good.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming along today, Jeff. That's all we have time for. So if you're listening, that was another interesting session where we talk about the importance of good communication in the sales process. I hope you've enjoyed this session as much as we have. And if you want to get in touch with Jeff, please feel free to search for Jeff Wade on LinkedIn, or you can find out more at onrik.com.au, O-N-R-I-K. And if you have any topics you wish for us to discuss, or if you have any questions, feel free to jump on the frontlinepodcast.com, fill out the contact form or connect with us on social, and we'll be back with you as soon as we can. Thank you again for listening. This has been another episode of the Frontline Sales and Marketing Podcast. Please tune in for next time. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to the Sales and Marketing Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode and hope to see you again soon on the front line.